We are Rogue Media Sports.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics. Because that's who we are.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
It is the Doomsday Podcast coming to you. Ed Werder, Matt Mosley, as always. And this comes on the heels of another Cowboys win. Back-to-back wins for the first time in about 15 months. We'll hit on that. But Ed Werder, you'll hear a little bit of background noise other than just our normal Zoom activities, because Ed is getting ready to fly back from Arizona, where he is at Sky Harbor Airport. And he saw a very interesting ball game that the Arizona Cardinals were able to win 33-26 over the Eagles. And, of course, that was another good thing for the Dallas Cowboys and their dim but somewhat playoff hopes. They're alive, Ed.
Yeah, surprisingly, given their record, their simplest path, obviously, to the playoffs, and maybe their only path, is to win the NFC East. And that would require them winning their last two games against the Eagles next week, who I just saw today, and then at the Giants the final week of the regular season, while Washington would have to lose its last two games against the Panthers and at Philly. Not out of the realm of possibility. The odds that I saw, at least through the early games, which included the Cowboys winning but not the Eagles losing, is Washington has a 59% chance of winning the division, the Giants 29% going into their game against the Browns in primetime, having bumped the Cowboys up the primetime stage. The Eagles at 8% probably went up a little marginally, or down a little bit today because they lost to Kyler Murray and the Cardinals, and the Cowboys looming at 4%.
And I think tonight, because of their opportunity against the Giants, if the Giants lose that game, the percentage would have to, I think, kind of hop up there a little bit more for the Cowboys, it's a tiny chance, but there is a chance. And as long as there's a chance, we're going to talk about it. Now, Ed, what I'd like you to do now, as we record the Doomsday Podcast, I want you to stand up where you are there in the Sky Harbor Airport and make an announcement that we're trying to record the Doomsday Podcast, and you need everybody, the holiday travelers, to keep it down a little bit.
You know, there aren't a lot of people here on the level where I am. I think there are a lot of people in the airport flying for the holidays. I'm just hoping that nobody calls me out about not wearing my mask at the moment while I do the podcast in kind of alcove here at the airport.
Yeah, slip it on every once in a while if you need to while I'm talking or something, just to kind of keep up appearances. It is Ed Werder recording from Sky Harbor Airport, where they have one of the largest escalators ever known to man to get down to the rental car there at Sky Harbor. I think one time I may have dropped some luggage down that went scrambling down that long escalator. All right, as we boy, I've gone dark here all of a sudden. This is interesting. Yeah. Oh, there you are. There you are. There you guys are. All right, Chris Gross, the producer of the Doomsday Podcast, and right now a huge member of Frito Nation Productions. Play the music, sir. All right, it is the Doomsday Podcast. Of course, Glenn Stretchsmith and his grades, his stretch marks, coming up a little bit later. But Ed Werder standing by. Ed, the Cowboys, and you were able to get in position. You've had to do this recently. Fortunately, I believe you're going to be on a Cowboys game next week because Cowboys at least kind of hanging around. So
yeah, I'd like to say that I've had to cover some other teams that have playing games of more significance recently. I think it's been since before Thanksgiving that I last saw the Cowboys play live. And quite honestly, that's what they deserve from me. I guess tonight I was doing a little advanced scouting, you know, covering the Eagles, having talked to Doug Peterson during the week about Jalen Hurts and what their expectations were for him. But next week I will be back 2 days after Christmas to cover the Cowboys and the Eagles. And, you know, the Cowboys coming off this game just appear to really have conflicting priorities. I mean, on one hand, they're clinging desperately to their bad odds at winning one of the worst divisions in NFL history, and they have a much better opportunity to secure the highest possible draft spot, but they seem not to want to do so. And I have to acknowledge that the hierarchy with the Cowboys seems remarkably committed to succeeding at the first option. And you really can't complain about their desire to win games, but this just seems the wrong time to suddenly prove capable of it, if you ask me.
I mean, I would say, yeah. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, they failed remarkably, falling from the ranks of the hopelessly mediocre to the truly bad, because excluding season openers, this is going to be only the third time in Cowboys history, no matter what happens these last 2 weeks, only the third time in Cowboys franchise history that they failed to win even one game against an opponent that entered the game 500 or better. The other two times that happened were 2015 and the team's very first season in 1960. So that's how grim this season has been.
Man, I tell you, on this 60th anniversary or whatever I've been talking about with our Miller Lite sponsor, it's very interesting to think about all that history. Ed, as you were making some excellent points here, I was taking a peek. I would say, by the way, I think Washington, I'm going to keep using these jokes that we were using last week. Washington does seem like a team uniquely prepared to lose the last two games of the season. I looked it up, Ed. The Haskins, I would say that if Dwayne Haskins has to throw, put the ball in the air 55 times, that is a recipe for a loss right there. And, of course, they did lose to Seattle, a team that's been scuffling a little bit, 20-15. And, Ed, make sure that's not your flight they're calling there. 38 for 55 for 295 yards, one touchdown, and two interceptions. This is what you need if you're the Cowboys, is Dwayne Haskins putting the ball in the air a ton of times. And it's going to be interesting, Ed, to kind of see how this plays out. Now, for the Cowboys today, and I know some of these teams have really accommodated you. You're like, hey, I got to have my Cowboys game on. I got to see the Cowboys because I got to do the Doomsday podcast. They're like, Mr. Werder, I know that guy out in Arizona. What's his name? Dalton something.
Mark
nice
Dalton.
Guy.
One
really nice
guy.
Yeah, like, just a very likable guy, unlike some other people in the league. No, I'm kidding. Dalton's very nice. But he'll set you up. You're watching the Cowboys. Now, in this one, they got off to one of those great starts and then let the 49ers, even with the fake Sam Bradford, Mullins at quarterback, they let him kind of fight back into that one. Ed, isn't it funny that we talked about, think about the talking point we had for so much this year. They don't score off turnovers. They don't get takeaways. It's like historic how bad they were at it. They give up a ton of points, you know, off turnovers and all that. And suddenly, this is like the most opportunistic team in football. I mean, it's crazy how many points they score, and that was today's recipe for success. Right out of the box, they, you know, they're getting takeaways and then cashing in on that.
Yeah, I mean, the thought I had as I was watching the game was in the precise moment that it benefits them to lose for the purpose of securing the highest possible draft pick, they win consecutive games for the first time under Mike McCarthy. And, of course, it's not entirely their fault because, as you say, the Cowboys' opponent for the second consecutive week almost allowed them no chance to lose. You know, the just like the Bengals, the Cowboys were +4 in turnover margin. They scored 24 points following San Francisco mistakes, and that didn't include CeeDee Lamb returning an onside kick for a touchdown. And you're right. I mean, if you look At the last two games, the Cowboys have 8 takeaways, and they've scored 41 points off turnovers. In weeks 1 to 13, they had 11 total takeaways and scored 28 points. So they've scored more points off turnovers the last 2 weeks than they did the first 13 weeks combined. And they won a game. Again, you can argue whether they should be or shouldn't be winning games. They won a game when the 49ers had 13 more first downs, 167 more offensive yards, and had the ball for nearly 10 minutes longer than they did. I mean, there's no way you should win that game, especially with your backup quarterback and no offensive line. But, you know, the 49ers are second in the NFL. They've displaced the Cowboys. For most of the season, the Cowboys were the worst team in the NFL turnover margin. Then they were beaten out by Denver recently. And now the team that's second to Denver with the most turnovers is the 49ers. They have 8 straight games where they've had 2 or more turnovers. That's the longest active streak in the NFL and the longest streak for the 49ers since 2008.
Yeah. Oh, man. That is remarkable. And it was kind of sad to see two great franchises. And Ed, you remember that in the 90s and then go back to the 80s and what these teams were made of in Montana and Steve Young and, of course, Aikman and Danny before him. Those were some great times in a great rivalry. And these teams are obviously right now. Although, Ed, we should add, the 49ers are not very far removed from being a great team. I mean, they just won they're a year removed from winning the NFC. It's just they got a bad quarterback situation right now. And Shanahan, as you know, heading into this week, he wanted to make a change, and for whatever reason, he just couldn't quite pull the trigger.
He said he was up for anything, but he was asked about Nick Mullins earlier in the week, which I thought was hysterical. Bethard is his other option, I guess. And Nick Mullins has been turning the ball over left and right multiple times a game, as I just said. It really has been more than just a quarterback with them. Dallas can argue that they've taken the worst injury situation in the league, having lost Dak Prescott, having lost their entire offensive line. But I think the 49ers, and in fact, Kyle Shanahan alluded to it this week when he was asked about the injuries, and he said, yeah, they've had it bad. Well, we're the only team that's probably had it worse than them. And I think that's a fair point. I think they've had 78 different players who have played just one game with them, and obviously they've been out without Jimmy Garoppolo, they've been without George Kittle, they were out Richard Sherman for a long period of time. Nick Bosa has been out of the lineup almost all year long, so they've been decimated by injuries as well, and so I think that explains their misfortune as well as it does the Cowboys. Now, this happened to them a couple of years ago, and they were extremely fortunate to have one of the greatest rebounds in NFL history, because they were so bad because Jimmy Garoppolo got injured that they had a very high pick, and that's how they got Nick Bosa with the second overall pick. And he's, I think, the best young, defensive front 7 player in the entire NFL, out now with a knee injury. But that's kind of the situation the Cowboys could have been looking at if they didn't go out and win these last two games. And I'm not saying that you should tank. I'm just saying, why now do you start playing well? Like, when it was there for you before to win straight up, why do you play your best football now? Is it the quality of the opponent? I mean, they have been, obviously, it's hard to lose when you're, plus whatever they are, 8 in the last 2 games, turnover margin, and scoring like they have. But I think ultimately they're going to regret this, but they're totally committed to trying to win. And you can think what you want of that.
It's, you could say it's like selfish or something. I think for McCarthy, it demonstrates, at least to Jerry and Steven, who had his back in this, especially after that Bengals game, when they were asked about the future and they were, they were aghast that they were asked about, how could you ask about Mike? I mean, this guy's a great coach. It's like, well, I mean, this year it seems to be an exception to that. You could tell, man, McCarthy talked about, and of course he was prompted to talk about it, but he was talked about the finishing with those 4 losses or 4 wins that one year with Green Bay.
His first year of Green
ago.
Bay.
Yeah. And so he's kind of, I think, talked about it with the team, as he's admitted that maybe they could do that with the Cowboys. And you're right. That hurts them draft-wise. is there momentum for next season? I don't know. They're going to have, you know, probably Dak Prescott back. The team will look different, all that kind of stuff. So the only thing, Ed, that could just kind of screw everything up, you know, the rule is if you make the playoffs, you can only have like a certain high pick. You know,
you're in the high, like, you're in the 20s. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's 19 or lower, or you're right. You're somewhere there if you make the playoffs. So they could literally slide all the way if it go. Still don't think it's going to go that way. It is kind of funny because I do think, Ed, we could be sitting here next week. I mean, the Redskins, the Washington football team could obviously lose to the Carolina Panthers. I mean, it could absolutely happen. And the Cowboys could go out and beat the Eagles. So we could be still be talking about the playoffs with 1 week to go, and it wouldn't be each week. It becomes less and less far-fetched. So I don't know. I don't know exactly how all that's going to play out. But
Ron Rivera is going to be pretty motivated next week against Carolina, a team he led to a Super Bowl in 2015.
Good point.
And obviously he left there, and he's in his first year in Washington. And Washington, you know, they got by far the best defense, but that's how they have to win. Like, they won last week without scoring a touchdown, which almost never happens in the NFL, given especially now where there's so much emphasis on offense. But it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. I thought the other interesting point that we should spend a little time with on this game, and there's no point going over the game play by play or quarter by quarter even, but I thought the other interesting thing in this game was that Ezekiel Elliott didn't play. You know, he had a calf injury all week. He was limited in practice. McCarthy, you said he expected him to play. Pre-game, they evaluated him and decided it wasn't worth the risk. And so Tony Pollard gets the start. And Tony Pollard winds up with 18 touches for 132 yards and two touchdowns. That's the most productive game the Cowboys have had out of a running back all year. And I sort of think it really demonstrates that the Cowboys made a poor decision in paying Ezekiel Elliott a second contract, especially doing it 2 years early. Most teams have real reservations about giving a running back a big second contract, and the Cowboys did it with Ezekiel Elliott holding out, with them preparing to fire Jason Garrett, and with them having 2 years of contractual control over Elliott. And I think then you hire Mike McCarthy, who really doesn't value the kind of running back that Elliott is. He values the kind of guy Tony Pollard is. Like, I don't think it bothered him at all that they didn't have a running game today for the most part. I mean, I know Pollard broke off the late 40-yard run, but he's happy to have a guy who they can create, you know, space for and throw it to him on a short pass, and that's not Zeke. So I think Tony Pollard fits this system much better, and it's going to be interesting to see, assuming they don't move Elliott in the offseason. I'm not sure they could if they wanted to. I'm not sure they could get an equitable deal given his contract, or that they'd be willing to do it given his impact on the cap if they do. But I just don't think they're going to maximize his value or his ability in the Mike McCarthy offense. I think today was a great demonstration of that.
I like that tweet. I think I even commented on it perhaps on my fake Twitter, my burner account. I liked I like that, and I think as we noted after the Bengals game, I thought that the comments from McCarthy about Pollard, the glowing, and he kind of did it again today. He might have caught himself a little bit more today, but I just think you're right. I think he loves that type of back. I think he likes the speed. I think that's, and you'll hear Glenn Stretch-Smith talk about it here in a minute. What he calls like the swing pass game, I guess it is, but, you know, screens, that it just seems to work extremely well with Pollard. And he had, at one point, you looked up the first half and already had whatever 50 or 60 yards in receiving. And he just brings a burst. And so I think that's interesting. To your point, straight, I was looking this up, Ed, what you said about Mike McCarthy. And you know, he was asked about, you know, what are you about the draft pick, all that. He said, we've all signed on for 16 regular season games, and we want to see this thing through. These games are very important. It's important for us to finish these last 2 weeks strong. I mean, I think he could sub in himself and go, this is important for me to appear competent after a season where I had some really bad moments.
Right, but I understand that, and because that's the coach's job. The coach's job is to win, you know, under any and all circumstances. And they've had a lot of adversity this year, obviously, and he's off to one of the worst starts by a Cowboys coach in history. He's fortunate that he won't surpass Tom Landry, who didn't win the game his first year, or Jimmy Johnson, who went 1-15 in 1989 his first year. But it could be similarly bad, and it's not all his fault, but that's what the coach is supposed to want to do. It's and Jerry and Steven really can't say anything that contradicts that, right? They can't openly say, well, we were kind of hoping at this point that the season's a waste and we just want the highest possible draft pick. But losing would create the most favorable options for rebuilding this team, and losing certainly creates more options at the top of the draft where the quarterbacks might be. And it'll be interesting to see, as we all know, the number one story in the NFL this offseason, just as it was last year, is going to be Dak Prescott, mm-hmm. whether he signs a long-term deal with the Cowboys or he doesn't. And they're going to be it's going to be more stressful this time than it was last time, because the Cowboys and all teams are going to have less cap space. And he's going to earn, if he's franchise tagged, he's going to earn a $5 million raise just because that's the way it is, you know? That's the system under the franchise tag. So that's going to be a fascinating negotiation, more so even than last year. I'll probably do more Dak Prescott live shots in the offseason than I did covering Cowboy games during the season. It's going to be that level of nationwide fascination.
Yeah, and on that point, Ed, and I'm going to go let you catch that flight here in a second, on that point, do you think there is any chance, because I don't, but you brought up the thing, you know, earlier about Zeke Elliott, and this highlighted, underscored the fact that he wasn't able to play today, hadn't had a great season. They obviously have a lot of cap room to him. You know the cap situation. Do you see any scenario where they decide to release? I don't think you could trade him with that contract and his lack of production. Do you see any scenario where they move off from Zeke Elliott, or do you think that would be Jerry admitting defeat too quickly?
Well, obviously they made a huge investment, $90 million guaranteed in the guy. They invested the fourth pick in the draft in him in 2016. The contract is built for them to be able to get out after next year, not really before. I'm not sure they're going to be in a position to take more punishment on the cap if they let Zeke go and then have nothing to show for that. That would seem counter to their purpose, but I wouldn't rule out anything with them. I mean, I just don't think you can.
Okay.
I just think the cap hit, to get nothing in return, the cap hit is too big not to have a player who's a good player in the right circumstances. I just think that I think he'd be a lot more discouraged and maybe even open about it if not for the fact that he can – it's kind of concealed in the, well, Dak Prescott got hurt in week five, and, you know, he hasn't had – the offensive line hasn't been there all year long, and that really explains why Zeke's been so much less productive than at any other point in his career. And I think the overriding reason he's really less productive than he's ever been is because of Mike McCarthy and the system he wants to use.
You know, that story today that was out there about Carson Wentz saying, hey, if I'm not your starting quarterback, I'm ready to move on. Ed, I did find it interesting that when Schefter, and I know you were kind of probably taking a peek at that whole story too, as well, you having known Peterson as well as you do. But I like that aspect of the story where it said, really, if you break it all down, it's not as prohibitive Carson Wentz's contract. It would be if they traded him or something, that the new team might have him for like 2 years, $37 million, which obviously for a franchise quarterback is not as insane as you might think. Ed, could we get Cowboys fans excited about Carson Wentz coming in here and taking over for a couple of years?
I'm not so sure that the Cowboys didn't get the best quarterback in the 2016 class, even though the first two guys were Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. I think Dak Prescott's demonstrated he's at least as good as either one of them, and arguably better. Certainly better than one of them, and maybe better than both of them. It's hard to say that. It's hard to say that about Goff, because Goff has been to a Super Bowl, and it was there for him to win, and he failed. But he did get his team there, and the Cowboys have not had that level of postseason success with Tony Romo or Dak Prescott. So
it's by not playing most of this season and then letting Wentz play much of this season, Dak looks better than ever.
Yeah, Wentz would have been better off if he'd gone down with an injury in week 5.
All right, Ed, we do need to get to our Glenn Stretch Smith segment. What many people refer to as their favorite part of the podcast, the stretch marks, as we look at some of the grades, break it down a little bit, and from WFAA's sports special and other places, ESPN Central Texas as well. Glenn Stretch Smith joins us now, and Glenn, another win for the Cowboys. And this is, just from an overall standpoint, pretty remarkable to go from a team that never scores off turnovers and gives up a lot. And then suddenly, over the last few games, this has become a big takeaway team, a remarkable day today with five of those in various areas, one-off special teams, of course. It is pretty strange to watch such a horrible season and then see all what the sort of the makings of a big play defense all of a sudden.
Yeah, you know, when you look at how they and I go back to kind of how this team was lined up at the beginning of the year. I mean, this team, when you think about it, was a big time focused on the defensive line, guys that get up the field. Guys that can go sack the quarterback, guys that can run different. You know, they've got the speed to run. You know, if the end crashes, the tackle's fast enough to loop around. You've also got it vice versa. If the tackle goes outside, you've got an end that's big enough and physical enough to come up underneath. And so with what Rod Marinelli had set up here was a very fast, physical defensive line. Then you added – you know, a guy like Alden Smith, you can see why they kept Randy Gregory and the things that he could do. You could see why they drafted Armstrong out of Kansas. I mean, we know that, you know, we know what Lawrence is. We kind of know what Crawford is. Then you put in, you know, Neville Gallimore. They brought him in because they needed a more, you know, needed some thickness down inside. But I think when you really look at it at the beginning of the year, I mean, this defense – was set up for the front six in nickel situations, or seven, if you know, with Vander Esch and with Smith. And then, you know, you've got Sean Lee, who can still come in there some. You've got guys who are really good box players, and they can wreak havoc with a four-man rush. They don't have to bring blitzes in order to, you know, have some ability to get up the field. That's what Rod Marinelli does. That's what he's always done, whether it was Tampa or any of the other places, Detroit when he was a head coach. You know, even though they were not a good football team, they would get after the quarterback. Well, it feels like they've almost kind of – it's almost taken them this long to – and I'm saying taken them – this defensive staff this long to get what they got. So, hey, what I'm saying is they got a good defensive line and they can get up the field and get after you.
Yeah, and this Neville's a lot better and more aggressive than the one at Great Britain before World War II broke out. I'm sorry, guys. I just did a little political humor there. Stretch, I'm sorry. What's that look on your face there? I will say this, Stretch. The secondary, how nice is it to see a playmaking safety? I mean, how long has it been since somebody not only would put a hat on you, but would close on the ball? a ball hawking safety that'll come get an interception, break up passes. I would say, one of the highlights of a poor season was Donovan Wilson may be hanging around here for a little while.
Yeah, he's a guy that is a box safety. I mean, that's what he was at A&M. I mean, you can tell he's a physical guy. He'll come downhill and support the run. And he did make a nice play on that seven route where he was sitting back there in cover two. And that's a deep out cut. And he broke underneath it and went and got the ball. So I agree with you. I think he's a keeper. I think you saw some things out of Diggs. And I think you see some things out of Lewis. Now then, once we get past those guys, it is bad. Awuzie couldn't cover me. I mean, I'm just telling you. I mean, he ain't worth it. Okay, Matt, I know tonight it's a ha-ha-hee-hee night. You won't laugh about your history background. He ain't worth a tinker's ass. And let me tell you what else. If you watch Anthony Brown, that last throw into the end zone, I'm telling you, when he goes to get off the ground, I promise you, it's not 3 inches off the ground. Mosley, you'd look like a Skywalker compared to him. I mean, I'm just like, that's all I need to see is his lack of explosive ability to get off the ground to go, no wonder he can't cover anybody.
I'm going to keep workshopping some of that World War II humor. But, Stretch, that's interesting that some of those guys, to me, like you say, Jordan Lewis, we've been talking about him for a couple of years, seems to be Johnny on the spot. The man will make a play on you, and he likes that little blitz. If you use these guys in the right spot, you're right, you may have something. Sometimes they get exposed. But some pretty nice plays back there today. What about the linebackers? Somebody had a funny line. You know, your old guy that you've probably known for years, Tony Casillas. He said, I think I saw him on Twitter say that Jalen Smith is the best tackler of a guy 10 yards downfield of anybody in the league.
Jalen he does some things that really, I mean, that make you just shake your head. I do see his ability to run sometimes, and you think, okay, well that burst or that flash is what really gets you excited about him. But I agree. I mean, he's not a downhill player. He's a lateral at best, side to side player. He doesn't cover very well, and so I don't know. He really is. He's become the weak link in those guys up front. I mean, I hate that Sean Lee has grown. You know, has grown older and a little longer in the tooth because, I mean, Sean Lee in his day, I think, would have fit really good in this defense. But I see some things sometimes out of Jalen Smith that you go, wow. And then you see other things that you just say, what are you doing? Or what are you seeing? Or are you playing with your eyes closed? And it makes them hard to grade. I'll tell you that. It really does. It makes them really hard to grade.
I want you to give me one grade between Alden, DeMarcus, Hamilton, Antoine Woods, Crawford, that whole bunch on the defensive line in that whole group that was rotating in there. What would you give that group? Because obviously the 49ers were at one point Mostert. And even the young man from Elkhart, Texas, and Deep East, Texas, Jeff Wilson, looked like they were going to gash the Cowboys a little bit. But the group ended up playing pretty well, it seemed like.
Yeah, the defensive front did play well. I'm going to include Gregory. You didn't mention him. Armstrong, I'm going to mention him. I mean, they rolling guys in there. And I think that group is really the best of what you have. And I would give them a B. I would give the linebackers at best a C. And if it wasn't for the two interceptions that kept, you know, that really sealed the game for the Cowboys, the secondary, it's really hard to watch. I mean, I find myself just barking at the television with how awful the secondary is at times, but they make a few plays here and there that keep you from, you kind of have to grade it on the curve a little bit and give them a C.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. You brought up Armstrong, the young man from Kansas, number 92, came into our screen at one point and forced one of those special teams fumbles, I believe it was him, poked it right out of there. It was nice to see. Over on the offensive side of the ball, Stretch, if you're going to kind of talk about that, let's start with Pollard's day. All right, this is a guy that obviously Mike McCarthy likes a lot. Seems to be a guy gives you a burst. He put the game away with that late run, and then also really, really good in the passing game. This guy gives you a little more oomph or speed, as it were, than Zeke. Pat, what do you think of the evolution of one Tony Pollard?
Yeah, he runs the swing route. He's a really good swing route runner. I mean, he understands kind of how to lose a little ground right there, how to keep his shoulders going north and south. He catches the ball and hits it up in there. I saw him today in a protection standpoint, which he's not as good a pass protector as Zeke is because he doesn't have as much thump to get up in there and block the linebacker. But I did see him in a quick situation today get up in there and thud a guy up, which you want to see. I tell you, the kid out of South Carolina, is it Dowdle? Is that how you say his name? I thought he showed some things today that was, you know, that give you some hope that, okay, all of a sudden there's some depth at that position. The thing that concerns me is I don't think Tony Pollard is a 18 to 20 carry back. I just don't think he can physically hold up in those situations. But when you saw what he did today, they put him in his strength. They allowed him to, you know, they kind of got the ball to him on the perimeter that one time down there in the red zone. So I do like how they're using him. I like how the offensive coordinator and Kellen Moore is getting him the ball and using him because when you get him the ball in space, he's a good football player.
All right. And then what do you think about the maturation? Finally, this O-line has played together a little bit. I saw McGovern in there. Knights, obviously, over there on the left side. Connor Williams, only guy that's an actual starter that's in there. Have you seen some growth from that group? Still hard to run inside, but have you seen? I would say that Armstead for the 49ers and a couple other players that came to mind were the rookie 99 for the Niners were getting in there a little bit on some of those games they were playing. What'd you think of the overall O-line play?
Well, it's hard to grade that too because Robert Saleh, who is the defense coordinator at San Francisco, likes to run a ton of exotic stunts. They stem guys and blitz guys up inside and can really get you – they can make you look bad at times, I think is what I'm trying to say here. And when you have an inexperienced guy, there was one time that Looney kind of turned and he didn't stay square and the looper came right back inside and it was Armstead to make the sack there. I'll say this. It looks like they've got a bunch that's really tough that they'll keep fighting you for 60 minutes. You want to see that. You want to see what they're doing. You want to see a progress of a group that seems to be working together and working better. You're starting to see that they have had some time together. So, you know, I like that. I'll group the tight ends in there too, because I see some things out of Blake Bell that I really like. And then, you know, Schultz will do some things to block the perimeter too. So, tight ends, offensive line, I think gave you a very workmanlike, a all-day effort today, and I thought that was good.
All right. Scout, the dachshund of very much approving that last comment from you. Stretch, as you see this team, Dalton, try to get the ball, you said the tight end, man, I love that, where he just kind of burrowed down there and ran over some people. That was nice. What do you think about this? The rest of that crew, though, they got banged up, I guess, a little bit. Gallup went out. It was interesting to see them going to Noah Brown too much, and so that was a rough scene. What did you make of the way the passing game developed today?
Yeah, well, they were really gonna, once Gallup went out, you know, they were gonna go ahead and say, hey, we were not gonna let. You know, they weren't going to let Cooper beat them. And you saw at times that they would try to give over the top help with CD Lamb. That didn't always work real well for him. So, but I like Noah Brown. I just don't see a real The problem is he doesn't have the vertical speed that Gallup does, and so guys will tend to sit on his routes a little more when you get him out in the field. Now, he's a heck of a perimeter blocker too, but I thought overall the receivers gave you a really good effort today. I mean, CeeDee Lamb is a heck of a football player. I mean, this team is going to be set from that standpoint for several years, and I think that's all pointing up for the Cowboys. And I also think that you're seeing a quarterback in Andy Dalton that's getting more comfortable, you know, with those receivers, kind of where to put the ball, where he, you know, he's kind of reading their body language a little bit and throwing some of those throws that to me are really tough, and you have to work with guys to make those throws. So I think all in all, offensively, and I know you're going to see, you know, people are going to say, well, you don't see the numbers. I mean, they were playing a top five defense in the NFL, and when you consider again all the backups on the offensive line, I think offensively you got a really good effort today out of this team.
Let me ask you something a little bit off schedule, like a lot of things I do in life. Real quick, do you think when you think about the quarterbacks in this draft, and you think about obviously, they're going to continue to say they want Dak to be their quarterback, and we'll see if they get a deal done with him. Is there any, from the college football you've watched, obviously they're not going to get Lawrence. And we don't know if they're going to pick fifth or sixth. Is Fields from Ohio State or the young man Wilson from BYU, is there anybody that just from the preliminary college football that you've watched that would make you want to get in the quarterback game? Or do you feel like they're just so far down the road with Dak, they shouldn't even fool with that?
Well, I personally like Mac Jones a lot at Alabama. I think he shows some real ability to throw guys open. I think he sees things in really tight windows. Do I think that he's a pick'em, stardom, first-year guy? I don't. Personally, if that's the direction they have to go, it's almost like I'd like to say, well, let's think about, you know, leaving Dak one more year under the franchise tag and then seeing where we can go here. But that's all, Matt, this secondary is so bad. And I'm telling you, I haven't ever seen anything like how bad. I don't want to make it sound like, you know, I'm really just drilling. They're terrible. They are bad.
Whoa, whoa.
So I don't want to shoehorn myself into that first pick, but I'm telling you right now, I mean, you got to, you know, instead of thinking about a quarterback, you better be thinking about at what point do you think you can get Patrick Surtain or what, you know, whoever that top corner is. And I haven't studied them enough to know, but I certainly will be taking a look at all that. But
wow,
I think those are things that I think you got to think about. You have got to upgrade this secondary. You cannot continue to go one more year with what you got right now. I think it's that bad.
You know, when you watch this secondary, and it sounds like you would, even after a day in which Wilson had the interception, and then obviously you had 30 Brown got in there, got an interception. I thought you might be coming in here patting those guys on the rear, but you continue, and I appreciate that about you. Would you probably say, Stretch, that when you watch the secondary play, you could use a Miller Lite?
Oh, could I? I'd say bring me a bucket of them over here. Bucket of them.
I bet at 6'7" there was a time you could have polished one of those off and still been okay. You still could have functioned pretty well.
Nothing better than a nice cold Miller Lite, and if you're going to give me one, hand me a handful. That's the way I look at it.
We certainly can accommodate you. Whether you're toasted to friends near or far, great taste is always close by. Right now, enjoying a Miller Lite with friends looks different for everyone, but staying connected is just as important. Miller Lite, the only beer of the Dallas Cowboys. And, of course, during this 2020 season, Miller Lite celebrating 60 years of Cowboys greatness. Pick up special mark packaging, the Cowboys 60th anniversary imagery and logo. And remember, the holiday season, Miller Lite, unique, occasion with the Cowboys with some of the the knitwear they put out for Thanksgiving Day game. Love that. Sweaters, the hats, the socks, the fuzzy socks that Stretch enjoys so much. Proceeds donated to Salvation Army. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Lite Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Stretch, thank you. Thank you so much.
Mosley, before the next time you want to give a history lesson, go train that damn mutt you got. See you later.
Oh, that's hard. That's a harsh way to end it, with Stretch talking about Scout, who got a little excited about perhaps somebody walking in the neighborhood, and we have responded by having to put him up. Okay. And Ed, I know you do hear from Stretch from time to time. You know kind of what his MO is. I will tell you, since you didn't get to visit with him tonight, you were getting to the airport. You're covering that really an interesting Arizona Eagles game. That Stretch was very, even after the interceptions, was still very, very down on this secondary. Feels like the Cowboys are definitely going to have to add on there in the draft. Ed, what did you, obviously, this big some big plays from the secondary. I think Donovan Wilson has proven that, he's quite a playmaker. And I thought there were some good moments back there. Anthony Brown had a big play. What do you make about this?
Jordan Lewis had a couple big plays.
Yes.
I think Diggs is going to be a good player in time. I think he's a good player now. I think he could be an exceptional player in a short space of time. And it'll be an interesting – I mean, they have to win now, obviously. And that's their only hope if they're going to win the division to make the playoffs. And I thought this was an interesting note from the game I just covered with the Eagles. First of all, it was Kyler Murray, obviously Allen High School fame. It was his first 400-yard game, passing game in the NFL today. And then for the player that the Cowboys are going to face next week, another mobile quarterback, Jalen Hurts, in his second NFL start, is the first player in NFL history with 500 passing yards and 150 rushing yards over his first two career starts. That's replacing Carson Wentz, maybe permanently.
You have to wonder, and I didn't exactly know what they were doing when they took Jalen Hurts, because he's not like Taysom Hill. He's not. Jalen Hurts was a great college quarterback, but he didn't strike me as like a gadget type quarterback. And I think Doug Peterson, who, again, you know pretty well, was not, people said, well, you don't really seem to have a plan for this guy. Well, maybe the plan for this guy was to take over as their starting quarterback. And certainly they have played better. Are they great? No, but they've played better. Let me, last thing, this is a weird thing, but it popped into my head. I wanted to bounce this against you. Sitting there watching, and I know he made a big mistake on that interception he threw in the end zone. If you had a choice right now of moving forward with Dak Prescott or Kyler Murray, what would you do?
Wow, that's a tough question. Kyler Murray is a uniquely dynamic player. I mean, I think he's the fastest, quickest quarterback I can recall seeing, but he has some really bad passing downs and really bad passing games, and one of them was against the Cowboys, although the Cardinals won the game. I think I probably have more admiration for Dak than most people do. The fact that it's close tells you everything, because one was a fourth round pick, the 135th pick in his draft, and Kyler Murray is a first overall pick in his draft, and the team that chose him had just taken a quarterback in the top 10 the year before and got rid of him to accommodate Kyler Murray. So I guess I would go with Kyler Murray, but it would be a close competition.
Very interesting. Over Dak. We'll let Dak know about that.
Thanks for putting me out there like that. I appreciate it. Some random thought you happen to have just before my flight leaves. Sometimes these random thoughts you should probably keep to yourself and think them over and consider the spot you're putting somebody in. What would you do?
No, I do the same thing. I mean, but mine, you put a lot of logic into your thought. Mine would be just like entertainment value. It's just fun to watch this guy run around and do a bunch of stuff.
He doesn't do it enough. He doesn't run around enough.
Yeah, I know. But, man, he gets down there. That is a great – Dak could do some of that. But the quickness that he has, I was watching somebody the other night. Who was it? Same way. Just kind of like, oh, Lamar. I was watching Lamar the other night. It's just like that. There's just when you have somebody like that, and there are not a lot of guys out there like that, but it just can erase so much stuff. It's like, okay, you have this bad play happen, and then, oh, but he can go run for 15 yards at the end of the play.
I would say this. I don't think there's anything Dak can't do. Like, I think everything a quarterback who's going to win a Super Bowl or be one of the most successful players of his time at that position needs to be able to do, I think Dak can do all those things. And I would take Dak over Lamar Jackson, even though Lamar Jackson's a reigning NFL MVP. But Murray's a little different. I think Murray's a better passer than Jackson, and I think he's a faster. He's not a physical runner. They don't run power plays for their quarterback in Arizona like they do for Jackson in Baltimore. While I would narrowly take Kyler Murray over Dak, I would take Dak by a pretty good margin over Lamar Jackson.
That's interesting. I mean, I would literally trade Dak in a first-round pick for Lamar. So maybe I wouldn't make – I'd be a great GM. it is the Doomsday Podcast. Ed, any parting thoughts as you go get on a flight to come back here and then go somewhere else? What any last thoughts on this game or this Cowboys, where this thing's headed? I mean, I hope next week we're sitting right back here talking about a possible playoff team. I mean, it's crazy.
I'm going to leave you with a great point and a stat, if I can find it.
We'll be the judge
that,
of this.
I had before the game started, and that was that going into this week's games, the Cowboys had allowed the most points in the NFL at 400. And so now it's, what, 433. And the two teams that were next to the Cowboys that ranked just above them in that category were the Jets and the Raiders. And both of them have already fired their defensive coordinator. And we all know there's been a lot of speculation about Mike Nolan's future and expect that to be addressed immediately after the season ends. But obviously that's an ominous sign for him that he's allowed more points than two guys who just got fired during the season.
Yeah, that is an interesting way to end it right there. And I do think the Cowboys, my final thought is you have got to work on your Hail Mary defense. You've got to rep that thing. And I would also trade for Michael Bourne. I like that guy. Bourne, that number 84. I'd bring him in just for Hail Marys. That guy's great. He can high point anything. Ed, have a safe flight. Great to visit with you. And thanks for making us a part of your trip, buddy. We appreciate it. This is not easy to
do. Happy holidays to you and to our good friend Chris and all of our listeners and Stretch as well. And look forward to talking to y'all after Christmas and we see the Eagles and Cowboys play.
That sounds good. Everybody have a Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. We appreciate everybody who's been a part of this one. Good night from the Doomsday Studios with Frito Nation Productions and Chris Gross at the helm. Good night, everybody.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.